Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must-listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine Vosper here. Welcome to another episode of the We Are Women podcast. With me today, I have Trish Springsteen. Now, Trish is a multi-international award-winning speaker mentor, an international best-selling author, a radio host, and she specializes in speaker training. So you can imagine why we've got so much in common, and I'm going to pick her brain today. So clients work with Trish because they know that she can help them leverage their business with speaking and communication. And Trish is passionate about creating confident communicators and is a founder and owner of Trishelle. Now, it's a company dedicated to bringing communication and effective speaking skills to individuals, to businesses, and to organizations. Trish enjoys helping women develop their communication, leadership, networking, and presentation skills. Now, of particular interest to Trish is being able to help business owners and entrepreneurs to connect with their clients and have that passion and confidence to shine and grab opportunities when they come. Trish has been a keynote speaker, MC for conferences and events, gala dinners and meetings nationally and internationally. And she is also the author and co-author and contributing author, listen to this, for 11 books. And she's featured in Motivational Speakers Australia. So, and most importantly, Trish tells me that she absolutely loves what she does, and I will attest to that. And she has a great deal of fun doing it. Welcome, Trish. I'm so glad that you could be with me this afternoon.
Welcome, Janine, and thank you very much for having me here.
The 11 books and contributing author, that must have kept you busy.
Yes, it has. And it's an interesting step because when I first started out in business, or actually when I first even thought about speaking and training, I never thought I could be a writer. I didn't think I could write. And for many years, my co-founder did a lot of the writing in our business, and we parted ways, and suddenly I found I had to do some writing, I had to do blogging. And next thing I knew, I found I absolutely adored it, because what I realized, and I hadn't realized before, was writing was really just taking my verbal speaking and channeling it onto paper. Mm-hmm. And yeah, from there, I've just been asked to contribute to books. I've been co-authoring books and keeping myself busy doing that.
Well done, well done. I know I've started my second book now, and you know, it's so time consuming. So congratulations on doing that with 11 books. That's wonderful. Now, you've been in the business for quite a while now, helping women and become more effective communicators. What got you into it, and why did you start doing this? I mean, we all have a story behind it. So what's yours, Trish?
Well, I guess my story is, and it may sound funny to people who know me now, but we go back in eons of time. I was extremely shy, and I am, and I still was and am, an introvert. And okay. I avoided speaking. I had this fear of speaking. I didn't really want to speak at all. And I worked a lot of male-dominated industries in my previous businesses. Yeah, I just loved delegating. And I guess it wasn't until I got a mentor, which is one of the reasons I'm passionate about mentors, who really helped me to delve down into what I love doing and what I want to do, and sort of pointed out to me that if I didn't share my message or share my stories, then I was being selfish. And it's one of the things that I share with my mentoring clients now. I don't know. One of the words that I have to say, something, a praise, could change someone's life. And if I don't step up and do that, then they don't have that opportunity to grab that nugget of information. So that's sort of why I got into being in my business, because I'm passionate about helping introverts, because I'm an mm-hmm. introvert and I know exactly what it's like to be an introvert. I know what it's like to miss opportunities because you have a fear of speaking. I'm an author and I know what it's like to do everything wrong with your first book, because that's what I did. And I know, you know, what it's like to have that book sitting there and not knowing what to do with it once you've poured your heart and soul into it. And I'm an advocate. There are a couple of causes that I'm very passionate about. So I know what it's like to want to be able to harness that emotion when you want to share your passion and get people on side to change something. So I know what it's like to have that cause and about that message. So, yeah.
That's
why I started my business.
Yeah, and that's something, isn't it, that it's, there is an inner voice in all of us that, you know, the screams to come out sometimes that you have a great idea or you want to, you know, you're in a meeting and you really want to contribute something, but because you haven't got that the external voice and you haven't got that confidence in communication, you miss that opportunity to be able to share that. I've always said that being a good public speaker is probably the most important skill you'll ever have in business, because one, there's so many people, as you said, that have got great ideas, but to be able to express it is probably the most important thing that they can ever be able to do.
Well, I have to agree with you. I absolutely firmly believe that speaking and communication skills, they underpin everything you do, absolutely, from your business to your personal life. So why not give yourself a head start and be ready for opportunities by starting that speaking journey and putting yourself just a little bit ahead of the rest of the people? In today's world, those who can speak and communicate clearly and concisely and competently and confidently, they're the ones that are going to have that chance of opportunities more than those who are not quite so confident.
And that's a big step, though, for a lot of people, isn't it, just to take that step out of your comfort zone and do something like that. I know I've worked with people who are fearful. You know, there's this incredible fear, and the old Seinfeld statement, they'd rather be in the coffin than giving the eulogy. But when you've worked with people that have got that extreme fear, what's some of the tips that you have that you can share that will assist someone listening that will go, oh, great, that's something I'll be able to do?
Well, one of the first things that I like to look at is really delve down and find out what is that fear, because there are several different types of fear when it comes to speaking. The small number of people have that really, really, really deep fear, which has physical issues, and they need some other issues. But the ones that we can help with is it's possibly because they may have seen someone do something, get up and speak, and not been so successful, so they don't want to put themselves in that place. It could be that there's a fear that, okay, if I should get up and speak in a meeting or in a boardroom or present something, my peers are going to judge me. Or there's that fear that people are going to find out maybe I don't know as much as I think I do. Of course, there's that fear of success. And and then, of course, there's the nerves, the complete nerves of, well, I'm going to forget what I'm going to say. I'll make a fool of myself. So when we delve down, and we find out, okay, which fear is it? Was it something that happened at school years ago when you were trying to do a school presentation and you've now built that brick wall that says, I'm not going to put myself in that same spot? Whatever fear it is, then we identify that and we work through some mindset to overcome those little voices, because, you know, one of those little voices could be is that I'm not good enough, I don't know enough, I can't do it. And they really eat away in the back of our brain, those little voices. So I identify it, what we look, we delve into where is that fear coming from? Is it just fear of the unknown? Because sometimes it's just, I've never spoken before, so I don't know what's going to happen. Mm. And if I don't know what's going to happen, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
So we look at that, then we look at some mindset, and then we look at giving you some strategies and techniques to give you the confidence.
Okay.
So
yeah, yes. And that's really useful, because identifying the reason, and you touched on a few that, you know, I really know people I identify with, is that you don't want to make a fool of yourself. You know, that's something, and you know what, and you've probably found this as well, is that most audiences are there to encourage people. They're not there to pull them down. So it's very difficult to make a fool of yourself, because most people will, you know, be encouraging as opposed to deprivating.
Well, absolutely. One of the things I realised, my mentor many years ago helped me, and I help people to realise, is that it's really not about you. It really isn't. It's about the audience. It's about your client. It's about who you're sharing and speaking to. So when you realize it's not about you, that sort of takes some of that fear away and it puts control back into your hands. And sometimes that fear is a lack of control. And then you realize that it doesn't matter what you say really, because the way you say it, if you're being genuine, the way you connect, that's going to come over to the people. And you're right, audiences are very forgiving. Honestly, I've been speaking for over 20 years and, you know, I've yet to have someone throw some rotten tomatoes at me.
As long as you don't go into comedy, it's fine.
Yeah, and listeners, don't start coming around and throwing tomatoes. Basically, what I'm saying is I'm not perfect. I've made mistakes, and sometimes the things I speak about, sometimes some things, sessions have worked better than others, but I've yet to have an audience walk out on me. I've yet to have an audience boo me, because they don't. If they're not interested, they're not going to come and hear you anyway. So just by the mere presence of being there, and of course, yes, some of them have been told that they have to be there when we're talking at conferences and things like that, but they're prepared to hear what you've got to say. And if you think about, okay, it's not about me, it's all about them, and that you have a message that could change one person's life in that audience, and don't be selfish, then that sort of helps you get up there and get over what I call 60 seconds of insane courage to get those first few words out.
60 seconds of insane courage.
Yeah, just 60 seconds. Get those first few words out. Believe in yourself, because that's a lot of it one of my biggest passions is helping people to believe in themselves, to act on that belief, and then share it with others.
Yeah, and your statement of not being selfish, I mean, that's one of the things I use with the sales training is, you know, how dare you? How dare you not share this amazing, brilliant product that you've got with the rest of the world? Why are you hiding that? Why are you being so selfish? I loved it. I wrote that down when you said the word selfish, because that's something that, And it turns people around, doesn't it? It shifts their thinking totally.
Well, it does, because people, when I say it to them and I'm talking to them, they sort of give you this absolutely shocked look, because no one likes to think they're selfish and no one believes they're selfish. And then when you suddenly challenge them on their mindset and their perception, because a lot of it's just mere perception of what's happening, and when you challenge them to think about things from a different angle, to come at it from outside the square, and just saying, well, why are you being selfish, as you're saying, it just puts a stop and takes them to step outside that usual thing and really have a look at what they're doing and realize, wow, maybe I am. Maybe I am.
it just shifts that perception totally. No, I absolutely love it. Really interesting, you know, that sometimes people haven't done it before. That's one of the things that you said, and they don't know. When I worked recently at the Commonwealth Games and I was with Spectator Services, and the supervisor there mistakenly gave me a megaphone twice and put me at the top of one of those stands, like a lifesaver's tennis umpire stand with his megaphone. Now, you can imagine, I had an absolute ball with it. And because when they said originally within our small group, who's going to do this, everyone's just looked blankly, and I said, oh, yeah, I'll do it. But I liked give other people a chance, because I knew I wouldn't. I'd love to do it anyway. And then when we had a swap at our break, this other girl who hadn't put her hand up before reluctantly took it over. And when we'd finished, I said, how was it? She said, it was awesome. I just had the best time. And I couldn't believe the change in her. And then an opportunity came up later. She's the first one to put up her hand again to do it. It was, and she didn't know that she would enjoy doing it, because she hadn't given herself that opportunity to be the star attraction type of thing, and shout. You're actually literally shouting at people, but it was fabulous. And
yeah, it is. It is when you do start to really believe in what you're doing and take those steps and step outside that comfort zone and explore, becomes extremely empowering, and it just gives you that lift, and you suddenly realize, wow, what opportunities have I been missing because I haven't allowed myself to stretch and expand and try something new.
Yeah. You also said people fear success. Can you enlarge on that at all?
Oh, that is a really big one that is often extremely hidden. And it's amusing because, hey, don't we get into business because we want to succeed in some form or other? Don't we want to sell our products, or if you've got a message or a new product that we've developed, or an online course or whatever it is that we've developed and we want to share, don't we want it to succeed? Well, you would think yes.
Mm.
But for those people who fear the success, what that little voice is saying in their back of their mind is, oh dear, what if they actually like it? Then I'm going to have to do it again and again and again. How am I going to do it? What happens if next time it isn't quite so good? And then this sort of little voice starts getting in there, and I think, oh, well, I'm not going to do it, because if I do it and I'm successful and I have to do it again and I don't succeed, it's going to be a big disaster. Mm. Or people are going to ask me to come, and, you know, I got all my courage up to do it this first time, and then, oh, my gosh, they're going to ask me to come and speak again somewhere else, and I'll have to do it all over again. Mm. And that little voice then just eats away at the confidence. And so they think, okay, I've gone through this, and they've got played it out in their mind in this brilliant scenario of what disaster is going to happen, which they haven't even done it yet. And they thought, okay, well, I'm not even going to let that go down that track, so I won't do it. So what are they going to get? You know, nothing. So they don't succeed. And then that's self-perpetuating.
Yeah, and as we know, the more that you do it, the more comfortable you feel. And every time, yes, just sort of chips away at that fear just a little bit more and a little bit more. But that played it out in their mind. That's so – people often do that, and it's not just in public speaking, but we're talking about that topic now, mm-hmm. is that what everything that could go wrong is what they're envisaging as opposed to everything going right. And I imagine that's part of the training that you use as well.
Yeah. I mean – what if everything went right? I mean, what if, yeah, you did succeed, and what if everybody liked it? And what if the next time you did as well? I mean, I always say to you, what's the worst that can happen? The absolute worst. Mm. Think about that. And then flip that over and think, well, what is the best that can happen? Mm. And then you're starting to have a scenario and play that in your mind as to, well, they're going to like what I have to say. I've changed somewhat. I've grown. I've become confident. My audiences are enjoying it. And when you start to play that little mindset and scenario in your mind, then you're starting to set in place a more positive outcome, and it becomes a challenge. I was just writing a blog post just recently. It was a chapter for a book. And we were talking about the advice we would give to a younger self. And I said, one of the things that is that there's no fear of failure.
Mm.
You don't fear failure. What you do is you look at each thing that might not go quite right, that might not turn out exactly what you want, that might have some bumps in it, and they become challenges and learning experiences. Mm. And when you change that perception, boy, does your world grow.
Oh,
it really does.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we're not born with those fears. We're not born with the fear that if we give something a go and fail that we'll be ridiculed, or, I mean, gosh, we'd never walk if we ever thought that. until we get that external influence going, oh, no, don't jump up on that wall because you might fall down.
Yeah.
And so you start looking for that fear factor, don't you? And finding it, well, in your subconscious.
It's that ingrained communication that comes to us where we say don't do something, and we hit it with the negative immediately rather than explaining, you know, if you jump up on that wall, the consequences could be. And you put it a different way. Yeah. It doesn't put in that that immediately don't do this, don't get up and speak, don't go out and try a new opportunity, don't start your business, because when I grew up, everything that was happening I wanted to do was don't do that because. Yeah. And it grains a little thing in your mind. And it's something that you can change. It is not hard to change it. It just takes commitment, choice, and a different perception. I mean, one of my favourite people, Sir Laurence Olivier, once said in a rock opera called Time, and he said, the only thing you have absolute control over is yourself.
Mm.
You are the only one that can control your attitude, your response, and what you think and what you say. Mm. And when you realize that, you control how you respond to things, how you respond to bullying, how you respond to negative thoughts, how you respond to arguments. If you look at your attitude and how you respond, then you are immediately taking away a lot of that that angst, that anxiousness, that argumentation where people get there and you start escalating your problems.
Mm. And you also take away blame. Because you're the person that's right. responsible for 100%, don't you?
Yeah.
Now, I know I think you mostly work with women, but I know you also work with men as well. Are there different communication styles with men and women?
Oh, absolutely. This is one of my favourite topics because most of my previous work has always been in male-dominated industries. When I was worked 10 years in the travel industry, male-dominated. 10 years with the medical industry, certainly male-dominated at that time. 10 years in the electricity engine industry, again, male-dominated. So I've watched and seen how males and females communicate differently. And it's, for me, it's one of the biggest things why we have, well, gender inequality. We have issues about equal pay. We have issues about representation on boards because we do speak differently. We communicate differently. It's not wrong. It's not right. It's just different. Mm-hmm. Men will communicate in a directive communication style, very upfront with what they're doing. And females will communicate in what we call a connective style, which is a lot of networking, a lot of relationship building. Now, this is general, I'm not saying all, but in general, you will find that. And when you get that, you can then you think back to conversations you've had with male counterparts, with partners, and you think about, well, now I understand why it escalated, or now I understand why I was left thinking, you're not listening to what I've got to say. Because we're coming at it from two different ends. When you realize that, and I talk a lot about this connecting with leadership styles as well, when you realize that, then it makes it very easy for you to change your communication style depending on the situation, the audience, and where you are. So, but females are a little bit easier at being able to acknowledge this than males. But I have, you know, males also do. There's some really great males I know that can really change to a female communication style, to a male communication style beautifully. And when you think about how you do those communications in your business, the ones that are really successful, just analyze them and you can see that they are flexible in their communication. It changes depending on the situation, changes with the teams. And it, ladies, for us, when we go into a boardroom, if we know that we need to change our communication style to meet those guys in the same level playing field, boy, are we powerful then.
Yeah, I worked in corporate for a long time as well, and I definitely have a more male style about me, more directive. But when I'm in that sort of environment, because you have to, otherwise you just get steamrolled. And yeah,
you do.
Yeah, and we women add a lot more connective words as well, don't we, into our language?
Yeah. Well, just ask someone, how was your day? Now, you ask a guy, you're going to get lousy, awful, you know, boom, 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 you'll get it. Ask a female and you'll get, well, when I was at work, this happened and that happened. And they want to give you the scene to build the whole scenario before they actually tell you what came out of it. And it's just a natural thing. And there's nothing right or wrong about it because there is a place for each style of communication. When I'm linking it with leadership, there's a place for each style of communication with each style of leadership or with a situation. For example, a female with a normal relationship communication style faced with a crisis situation is not going to do a relationship connective. They're going to be very directive. You need to stop this right now. An example that I often use is out of the army. It's one of the ones that I came out with, is that all you've got to think about is if you've got a patrol and they're casing an ambush, you're not going to sit around discussing, well, what do you think is the best way to get out of this?
You're going to be saying,
yeah, you're going to be saying, move now. And you get very good directive communication in the defense forces. But it also happens if you're in a crisis situation, if you're coordinating a fire or a rapid response, first response team, something in your business that needs to be coordinated very rapidly, you would use directive communication. Mm. Absolutely. But if you are looking at team building, you'd use female communication, connective style. Right.
But and presenting, so how do you relate this now to presenting? If you had a whole audience of men or a whole audience of women, well, that makes it a bit easier. But I'm assuming that if you're looking at, you know, an audience half and half, how would you suggest when you're coaching people to adapt to those two different styles?
Well, one of the things, I think presenting is a little bit different in some respects than communicating within a business or team environment. But one of the things I have to say, the first thing is you've got to be yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to be you. You have to be genuine. You can't be anybody else. So you need to take those skills and enhance them. Now, what it means is you need to mix it up. You want to include some stories because we all know that stories and storytelling, even with guys, is going to get your message across. But then you also want to have some directive stuff like facts, things in there to back that up that will connect with the people who are liking that directive communication. So my presentations usually have a mixture of both, and I recommend to people to have a mixture of both. You want stories in there because stories connect. You want to share a little bit about your relationship, but you want to make sure that in amongst all that, you've got some very clear-cut facts and figures, directive stuff that will connect with those people. Now, you can't be all things to everybody. It's just if you try doing that, you're going to turn yourself into a pretzel. It just doesn't work. So you need to be thinking about, okay, which is the best way? Who am I speaking to? What? I guess the main thing I always say to everybody is, what do I want to get out of this presentation? Where do I want to take the people? What is the goal that I want to achieve? And looking at your audience and saying, well, what do I want them to take away? Then you do your presentation based around that. So if it's all females, of course, I'm going to use more storytelling, more connective, more relationship. If it's all males, I'm going to be a little bit more directive. But when I've got mixed audiences, I like to mix a bit of them in there so that everybody can have a connection of what I'm going to say at some stage in my presentation.
Hmm. And that, of course, makes a lot of sense as well. I've just heard a bit of thunder outside. So if we get some background noise on this interview, thunder, wow. That's surprising. Now, where that came from this afternoon? It's autumn here in Brisbane, which means that we shouldn't be having thunderstorms in the afternoon. That should have stopped a couple of months ago, but there we go. So we might have some background noise. Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? That's the connective. And again, as you said, just be yourself. I know you were at an event yesterday where I presented, and I made that comment about being myself in presentations. It's not that full Yahoo preacher style that, you know, particularly I found that Americans like from stage. It's just more that subdued, here's a message, and still keeping enough language and interest in delivery that people stay interested and connected. So, again, it's not just even within male and female. Of course, it's within different countries too, and you would have found that because you've presented in different places.
Oh, yes. Look, it's different cultures, different countries. They're all like that. But, yeah, in America, if you're going to be speaking in America, for Australians, we need to sort of take ourselves a little bit up a notch, be a little bit more dramatic to a certain extent. Still, and I always come back to this, being yourself. Mm. Because if you try and change what you're doing too much, it becomes very false and you will not connect with your audience no matter what you do. But you can take it up a little bit, be a little bit more, just a little bit more dramatic, but be aware. But don't try and compete because you're not going to, because that's their style and you have your style. But you can add in some things to just take your presentation just that little bit level to just connect with them more.
And that's the opposite then too for the Americans. If they're delivering it elsewhere, because the most recent audience that international audience I presented to was in Seattle, and I had Europeans, Americans, and Australians in the audience. And so Europeans are much more subdued than the Australians in their delivery. And then you've got the Australians sort of in the middle, and then the Americans, and this is very generalization as well, but the Americans on the other end. So that's something that for my American ladies that are listening is if they're presenting to pull back a little bit, isn't it, depending on their audience as well.
Absolutely. It's all about the audience, really, and about where you are. And it's about knowing your audience. Now, good speakers, good presentations will do their research, will find out who's going to be in the audience, and will take that on board. Now, I'm not saying you have to change your style completely because, as I said before, and I can't stress it enough because I've seen so many people try to be something they're not, and as soon as you do that, it doesn't work. But you can either take it up a notch, you can bring it back a little bit, if you know who your audience is and if you really want to connect with them so that they go along with you. Because, yeah, Australians, I've been to a lot, and Australians do get a little bit taken aback at that real over the top sometimes. It just doesn't connect with us. And but that's the way they are in America. When you go there, that's the way they do it, and that's their communication style, and that, and it works brilliantly for them.
Yeah.
So we just need to be aware, and you find that the good speakers do. If you watch them speak to an American audience, it'll be a little bit different to how they would speak to a European or an Australian audience. It'll be subtly different, and sometimes you think, well, most people may not notice, but you'll find that the audience seems to respond more to those who can do that.
Yeah, I know, because I do usually know the audience fairly well that I speak to, because it's within an organisation that I'm with, and especially the African-American ladies and gentlemen in the audience. So, you know, I can sort of go, okay, darling, what do you want? You know, and really take it up to a different level with them. But I wouldn't dare do that to my friends from Amsterdam. Not at all.
Yeah. They can be really upfront and very direct, those sort of, and that's great. And you just need to know. It's like knowing your communication. It's like the same with the male and female communication style. When you know these different things, or you be aware of them and you take them on board, then you know when to use them, when not to use them, and it makes your communication and your presentation that much more effective for you to get your message across for those who need to hear it.
Yeah, and definitely just even in an environment where you've got a leadership environment, or you've got something that you're just communicating, or even do you find that, because I know you do coaching around networking as well, so is that around, do you find that in networking, that different sort of style?
Oh, look, networking is really interesting. It is a whole it can be a whole new mindset, and it's one of the hardest things sometimes for females to do. Funnily enough, you would think not, because it's relationship. But a lot of the networking meetings, there's a lot of males in those networking meetings. And it comes down to which networking meeting you're going to, where's your audience, who do you want to connect with, who's your niche, and where are they going to be sitting. Now, there are networking meetings which are very much referral-based, and you'll find a lot of males in those, because it's very direct. And if you're going to be part of those networking meetings, then you need to make sure that when you're doing your introductions, when you're being part of that, you want to be direct as well. You be very to the point. And do that. Now, none of this, I'll preface this, none of this means you have to lose your femininity. None of this means you have to change who you are as a female or who you are as a male. Because a lot of people think, oh, well, and this is one of the things we find a problem in. Well, what we find a problem in organisations is sometimes females trying to climb up that ladder, they lose that relationship type connectivity and try and be more male than the males. And you don't have to do that. You really don't.
No.
So.
No, that's a big point. I've worked with a lot of people in construction and mining, a lot of women. Yeah. And, yeah, just some of them just. They really lose it within themselves trying to fit into this male world, and they do themselves no service by doing so.
I mean, I think a lot of times, I'll come back to networking in a second, but one of the things, a lot of the thumbs I think is we as women are our own worst enemies when we're talking about gender equality and equal pay and being able to communicate and being heard. We are our own worst enemies because we shoot ourselves in the foot a lot. We should be supporting women. We should be supporting each other. But most often you find that they think, oh, this is a cutthroat world. I've got to pull that other person down so I can get up. Together we can go a lot further than we can alone. And as women, we should be doing that. And I guess that brings coming back to your networking question. It's much the same. One of the biggest problems for networking is for introverts, actually. Introverts have a lot of problems with networking because they have to go into a meeting and they've got to not only maybe do that introduction, but they, if to make it effective, they need to make conversation. And an introvert doesn't really like doing that too much. They're not keen on that. And one of the things I sort of work with on introverts is how to have conversations, how to start a conversation, how to end a conversation. And I think the biggest thing I had to say to them is, do you know that person across the room there? You're sitting here thinking, oh, no one wants to speak to me. I don't know anybody, or I've got to start a conversation. I said, you know, you would be extremely surprised to realize that that person across the room that you think is really confident and knows everything is probably thinking exactly the same thing you are. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to start a conversation. So when you think that, you know, you take the first step and take your 60 seconds of insane courage and make that conversation starter, you're going to find they're probably going to grab you with both hands and think, oh, finally, someone who wants to speak to me. And I can speak from experience because I am an introvert. And I know I used to go into meetings. And I tell you what, I would find the nearest pot plant, the exit sign, the clock. I would time 10 minutes, hide behind the pot plant, and I'd be out the exit door as soon as I could. Which was not
And that's not your style now, I know, Trish.
No, it's not, because I've had a mentor who helped me realise it. I've worked on my communication and I'm still an introvert, but I know how to make a conversation and I know it's not about me, and I know that there's a lot of people out there who feel exactly the same. So if I take that first step, they're going to be absolutely relieved about it. So, yes, directive and connective communication does impact on what you do at network meetings. It impacts on how you start your conversation. But I guess also pure speaking skills, knowing how to structure an introduction, knowing how to answer a question, knowing how to breathe, knowing that if your body language doesn't mirror what you're saying, people are going to pick up on that more than what your words are. And that's what a speaking journey does for you, which is why we were talking about how speaking skills underpin and is extremely valuable in everything you do, because you'll learn those speaking skills and they transfer into your life. Even if it's just to go up to the school and be able to talk to a teacher about your child, if there's an issue, knowing how to harness the emotion and structure what you're going to say and be able to do it clearly is a big asset.
And just that you were talking about, you know, how to start or end a conversation. I don't know how many times I've been either out to dinner or at networking events, and I particularly am good at, you know, doing exactly that, you know, getting people and trying to draw out conversations. And there was one lady yesterday that I was, oh, I work so hard trying to draw a conversation out of it. I found out a little bit about her and I asked 1,000 questions. And, you know, we sort of got, I got some information, which was interesting, because then you can build on that next part of the conversation and ask her a question.
Yeah.
Everything was coming back with one word answers, you know, and it's okay. I build on again, but so many times that people forget that asking questions is the best way to be a good communicator, isn't it?
Oh, look, the two things I say to you to be a good communicator, two important skills. Know how to ask questions and listen. Listening is absolutely, but it's listening underpins not only being able to have conversations, but underpins presentation and speaking as well, because you're listening to a lot of things. But if you listen to what's being said clearly, you know, just, don't just fire questions like it's a quiz show. If you want to ask a question, give them time to add, and listen to their answers. And, yeah, if you get hit with one-word answers, well, that person's probably an introvert who is extremely nervous.
Absolutely. And this person was, and I was aware of that. So, you know, I'm not saying anything against her, but it was hard work on my behalf. But, again, it was that point of, okay, she's given me a bit of a in here. And you know what I do is then I ask the feeling question. So is that something that you really enjoy, or is it something that you building on, or no?
There's a few standard. There's some really standard ones. Find a point of contact, because you'd be amazed once you find a point and you do that trigger. Wow, it's like opening up a dam and the water just comes through. It's like, finally, I can answer. I know what I want to say. And just listen, because after that, you don't have to worry about the conversation.
Oh, my gosh, as a sales rep for years, you know, some of the people, it didn't matter what you said. I had one client in particular, and it didn't matter. It was all one answer. No, I don't need that. Yes, that's good. I'll do that. No, I don't. And I'm trying to build a way in. And I invited this person. He was very high up in the company. I invited him to, and he was really cranky as well. And I invited him to a football game. I had free tickets. And he said, no, he wasn't interested in that. And I'm just starting conversation. I said, I'm off to the theatre on the weekend to see, I can't remember, it was about women. Menopause musical. That's a menopause musical, okay. And he said, oh my gosh, we're going to see that with my wife next week. It sounds absolutely amazing. And I'm really falling up off my seat. And so now, you know, years later, we still have these conversations about theatre shows and musicals and things. And and my son is in construction, and he worked for him at that time. And kidding, Mum. No way in the world that you got through to him. But just finding, as you said, that topic that is that one topic.
I guess one of the other things is not making assumptions, not just assuming because this guy is a big top CEO in a construction company, must like all of those big gruff things. In a lot of cases, they like a lot of different things. But they don't like to let people see that because of the assumption that if they let their employers know what they're like, well, guys will take them as being something completely different. So there's all those assumptions and perceptions that are out there in the world. And I try not to assume about anybody. I try to go in, and it's not always easy because it's sort of almost inbuilt in us to make assumptions. But I work hard on it to try not to make assumptions and assume when I meet people just on face value what they like and what they do. Because as you know, I wear purple. I'm not a purple. And there are a lot of people out there that make assumptions based on what I wear and how I look. I was once told that I would never get any corporate speaking gigs and that a speakers bureau would never look at me because I had brightly coloured hair and wore a lot of purple, and they think I wouldn't be very serious and wouldn't be able to connect with their corporate clients. Well, I get corporate speaking gigs. I do corporate workshops. I connect very well with their clients. And I think my answer to them was, well, they're probably the companies that really need me most, because if they can't see beneath that to the gold that I've got to share, then they've probably got big problems in their communication in their company.
Yeah, and that not judgment is really hard, isn't it, within yourself to not do that. Yeah.
It is hard. You've got to work on it all the time. I mean, one of the things I was told was, why don't you change your colour? And I just sort of looked at this person and I said, look, I talk about one of the top characteristics of presentations and communication is authenticity and being genuine. And you want me to not be authentic and genuine to who I am? There's a dissonance there. And if there's a dissonance, your audience or your clients are going to pick that up. So you have to be true to who you are. You wear the right clothes. Sometimes you change little things, but you'd be true to who you are. And the people who want to work with you, want to hear you, want to do business with you are the people that will find you and resonate with you. Because the other powerful thing is not everybody likes you.
Oh, really?
Not everybody.
Oh, my God.
No. Sorry. Going to break that news to you right now. True. Not everybody likes you. And you know what? That's okay.
It's okay, isn't it? It would be a very boring world if we all liked each other.
We all like the same things. We all like each other. Where is the where's the diversity, the abundance, the people who like you and want to work with you will find you. And it's quite okay. It's extremely empowering when you realise that it's okay if people don't like your presentation because the ones who do.
Yeah, and that's been one of the hardest things that I've had to learn is that people unsubscribe from your stuff.
Oh, isn't that terrible when you get an unsubscribe? I used to cry.
But then, you know, what I realised is the ones that continue to subscribe and open everything that you send out, they're your biggest fans, and they are. They're the ones that come to me and say, hey, I need, tell me about your next course. I need some coaching. You know, so, yeah, it still hurts a little bit when people unsubscribe.
Oh, I think we all build, you know, we all like to be liked, and we all like to think that people are getting what. And I guess what I know what you're saying. I know people unsubscribe my list. I used to like, oh my gosh, I'd go around for thinking, what did I do wrong? What have I done? And I realize now I've grown into who I am and what I'm doing. And I think, you know, that's okay. They probably need to go and find what resonates better with them. And the people that I've got really like what I do. And they're the ones I can really give. It's like people who get on Facebook and in groups and that, and they go wanting, or on their pages, they want thousands and thousands and thousands of likes. And it's sort of encouraged because if you want to do online summit things, a lot of people say, oh, unless you've got 10,000 likes or unless you've got 10,000 in your database, you can't do it. But to me, I like quality over quantity.
Yeah.
And I think it's better to have really good, like maybe 500, maybe 1,000, that really like what you do, that really connect with you, because they're the ones that you can change their lives with. Because if people can't connect with you, you're not going to change anything for them.
No, I totally agree. I had did a webinar a while ago, and I forgot to share my screen for an hour. So, and by the time I finished, I had 8 people still there. I mean, I wouldn't have stayed. I really wouldn't have. Anyway, so I had the 8 people on. I had about a 90% buy-in because they were fans. You know, they were the ones that really were interested in what I had to say, and then obviously bought into the product. So that was one of the best lessons I think I ever could have about getting the right audience and speaking the right way in your authentic voice to the right audience.
Yeah. I often have people sort of say to me, oh, should you always put PowerPoint on with a presentation? Do you do this? And I think, you know, to me, PowerPoint is a really great tool because it adds value, but it's not you.
Mm.
And if you want to be good, you need to be flexible. You need to be able to do your presentation without it or with it. It shouldn't make any difference. And sometimes I do a radio show as well, and I've had some real doozies because mine's live. And if you try being on a live radio show when your guest can't log in and you're trying to send an email, type a message on Facebook in PM and speak at the same time, it's about multitasking. But so it's just... it's just being you. It's just sharing what you've got.
And, you know, out of everything with all of the tips that you're talking about and the different things about speaking, I think that's one of the best things that anyone takes away anything else is just be you, isn't it?
Yeah, you just be you. Look, I you know, you and I both help people with presentations, and we've got techniques, we've got strategies, we've got things that tell you how to change your voice, your body language, one little finger, how to that. But really, I say to people, 80%, 90% of it, if you just have a genuine passion, you have a message that you love and you want to share, and you stand there and share it, your audiences are going to forgive you umpteen number of things. If you say too many ahs or ums, they'll forgive you. The rest of it, I say, the last 10% is just polish to make it easier for them to understand you.
Yeah.
But without that being genuine authenticity and whatever way you want to say, because those words get bandied around a bit, but it's absolutely true. Without that and that connection, letting people see into your heart and who you are, that I don't care how structured and polished you are, if you don't have that spark, it won't work.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we're sort of coming to the end of that. That's gone really fast.
Oh, Lord. Yes, it has.
A few takeaway points that you want to, we've covered a lot, but if you're going to take away anything other than we just talked about being, being you and being authentic and genuine, what else would you suggest from the topics that we've covered?
Okay. I guess the power of 60 seconds of insane courage to step up and be you. You can say 60 seconds to just think about it's not you. Don't be selfish. Remember, it's all about them. And just get up and share.
That step, isn't it? That first step out.
Outside.
All of a sudden you're outside that comfort zone and you're like, my definition of a comfort zone is a confinement of anxiety. But I often use that one.
I use for comfort zone, I often use a stagnating pool.
Yeah, that's another one too, isn't it? That's good.
Because when you can only grow by changing and challenging yourself. And if you stay in your comfort zone, you're not going to grow, so you're going to stagnate.
So a second takeaway point.
Okay. Know the difference between directive and connective communication. Just realise that there are different ways of communicating. Neither is wrong, but be aware of what you're doing and what communication style you're using and change it to fit the situation and the audience and where you are.
Yeah, that's very vital. And depending, again, which situation you're in as to, and who, as you said, who the audience is as to where you need to go with that as well. And I know you had a topic we haven't even covered for your third takeaway point, but you've got a couple of minutes to enlarge on that. So what did you want to cover with that? Do you want to explain what it is?
Oh, okay. Well, one of the things, my third takeaway point was the value of repurposing and leveraging to avoid overwhelm.
Okay.
And because one of the things I do is I help people to leverage their business of speaking and communication. And it's looking at people think that they've got to be everything to everybody and they've got to be on social media, they've got to be everywhere. And they think, well, I don't want to do presentations. I don't want to do videos. I don't want to do a webinar. I don't want to do an online. You want me to blog. I've got a blog and then you want me to do articles, my business and all. And they start to get overwhelmed and they think, well, which one should I do? Mm. And how can I possibly do all of it? And the answer is you can't possibly do all of it, but what you can do is repurpose what you've done and leverage what you've done. For example, if you've got a blog, there are great systems online where you can repurpose that blog into a video. It's one of my favorite. It's called Lumen5,
L-U-M-E-N-5.com.
You can take
Lumen5. Okay.
Yep.com. You take a passage out of your blog, you plop it into their onto their system, and it turns it into a video for you. They put the pictures, they put everything, and you've got a video with music.
Wow.
Now that's like 5 minutes repurposing because everybody knows, and well, as everybody says, and it's very true that video is an important part of connecting with your audience. So this is one way of doing it. So it's taking that. It's taking the video and changing it into an audio. It's taking the audio and putting it into an article. In other words, I'm saying don't reinvent everything. You can take your article and turn it into a short course. You can take your PowerPoint. I use PowerPoint a lot, but a lot of people use Canva. There are things where you can make those lovely quote memes that you've got, and you can put images there. So it's all about repurposing, leverage. And don't let content overwhelm you because basically I guess my final thing to you is if you want to be in your business, if you want to share your message, your product, whatever it is, you have to let people know who you are. You have to get known. You've got to be seen.
Mm.
But do it smart.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, how can people get in touch with you, Trish?
They can get me on Facebook. I'm all over Facebook. Just put in Trish Springsteen or Trishel, T-R-I-S-C-H-E-L. They can go to my website, trishel.com.au. I've got a ebook there, free download on some tips to improve presentations. So you can go there. You can go to my other site, which is trishspringsteen.com, and you can book a free discovery session with me so we can have a pre-conversation about some of the things that we've been talking about here.
Okay.
And PM me, become a friend on Facebook if you like, or on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn, so go there, and I'd love to connect there as well. So I'm easy to find. I'm pretty
and
unique.
Look at the purple hair. That's the easiest way to have I got the right Trish Springsteen? Absolutely. She's the one with the purple, amazing purple hair.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, that's been wonderful. There's been so many interesting points covered in that today, and I'm sure it's of high value to our listeners. So thank you very much for that, Trish. Thank you for joining me for the past hour, and it's been a ball.
It's been my absolute pleasure, Janine, absolute pleasure to share my love, my passion, and my magic with your listeners.
Welcome, thank you. And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. I've had Trish Springsteen with me. As you said, she said you can find her all over Facebook. And I look forward to you joining us on another episode of the We Are Women podcast. I'm Janine Vosper, your host, and bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the five most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.